2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
Where KSL offers Utah deeper insights on the news.
Host Boyd Matheson divides rage from reason
and elevates the conversation on issues crucial to our community.
On KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
All right, welcome back to Inside Sources. Marty Carpenter, Greg Scorta sitting in for Boyd Matheson today. It takes two of us to do the job that Boyd does every day, and even then, we're probably not doing it quite at the same level that Boyd normally does it. You know, Greg, we've talked about this on other programs that we've done together, KSL at Night, where we've co-hosted before. I always talk about this political bell curve, that there are sort of, if you think of it looking like a bell or like a ghost, right, if you draw a line that looks like a ghost, the extremes, there aren't that many people out on the extreme left, and there aren't that many people out on the extreme right compared to the number of people inside the bell curve, those right. Sort of moderates in the middle who maybe lean one way or the other. They may be closer to one extreme than the other, but they're in that middle. And I think that applies as a political communication device, a way to kind of sort people out and figure out who are we really trying to talk to. And that seems to be the case more and more on social media.
Oh, it does. And it is. And my wife sort of colloquially calls them the wing nuts, but they're really not. And if you go to some of these conventions that we're having in Utah, you see that there's the far right and the far left that shows up. And our candidates have had to appeal to them to get to the general election where they've got to go back to the middle. And our social media has sort of taken that to a whole new level.
Yeah, it's not even like that recent of a phenomenon, because if you go back to when there only was a convention, when there wasn't an alternative route to the ballot, an alternative path to the ballot, I remember back in, say, 2010, 2012, somewhere in that time period, seeing a poll that said, here's what's important, top 10 issues to Republican delegates, and then here's what's important, top 10 issues to general Republican voters, non-delegates. And there was crossover on the list as far as some issues with education or transportation or healthcare reform, immigration were on, but they were in a completely different order, almost inverse in
right.
many ways.
Right.
And so there's sort of this disconnect between a couple different groups who are out there speaking, and the way they're speaking to each other online is the subject of a study that's been conducted by a couple of public relations professors at Brigham Young University, and they're joining us here today, Devin Knight and Christopher Wilson, assistant professors of public relations at Brigham Young University. Devin and Chris, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
You bet. It's a joy to be with you.
Hey, Devin.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Let's start with you, Devin. What was the purpose? What was the motivation for this study?
Yeah, the purpose of this study was to try to understand what signals from social media would be helpful to organizations, whether they're businesses or government, because we talk a lot about the importance of listening to our audiences on social media. But really, who is it that's speaking up on social media? And does it really represent the majority opinion from our stakeholders, or is it more just a loud vocal minority?
And who was interviewed? I mean, how did you get the information that you worked on, Chris? I mean, what was the I don't know what the word is, the source of information for your study?
Yeah, so we did a survey. It was a national representative survey that we pulled from a Qualtrics panel that we modeled to kind of reflect the census breakdown of people across the different census districts across the country. So, nationwide survey of 1,047 people that represents generally what the census breakdown of a country looks like.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
So, guys, I look at this in sort of the way that I go about social media, and it's been sort of part of my job to politically be out there on social media, not necessarily for myself, but to help candidates, campaigns, groups behind various issues that are on ballots to go kind of push their side of the story on social media. But I've noticed personally that I have retreated from being out there quite as much. I feel like I know how to kind of advise groups to do it, but I see the dangers of it, and I see that, you know, for my personal positions, I'm not getting persuaded by either side, and I'm sort of opting out. So is that something you're seeing in the study, that the folks kind of in the middle of that bell curve I talked about are just sort of opting out of the conversation?
Well, that's a great question, because I've heard a lot of that, too, from my personal network of friends and family who say, I'm done with social media. I'm getting off of this. This feels like a toxic environment. But what we found with our survey of people all across the country is that social media use is still high. I mean, 78% reported that they're on Facebook, 43% are still on Instagram, but that those who are in the middle, either moderate or they lean conservative or they lean liberal, they self-censor at much higher levels than those on the far right and far left. And so when we get on social media and we see voices, we're mostly just seeing those that are on the far left or far right, and the rest of us are censoring ourselves and really not saying much. We're mostly just scrolling and reading.
Is there a way that we can get these social media outlets to cater more to the middle, or is that just how they get their attention? Is that how they get their people to listen and sign up and watch, because they're seeing these extreme points of view?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Devin and I were talking the other day. There was an article in The Atlantic about the evolution of social media over time. And, you know, the great promise of social media when it first hit the scene was that we called it social networking. And the idea was that we could connect with each other. But over time, we've come to call it social media because the focus has changed more towards using those channels as a way to create content or create messages and push it out to an audience. And so the conversation has kind of died, and we've kind of moved to a model where people are just pushing messages out and trying to get attention and trying to get followers. And so we're in a mode of like any other media, like television or radio, where you're trying to attract an audience instead of trying to have a conversation.
So it's really more a matter of, like, it becomes kind of a broadcast medium then, that you can, yeah. if you're in the groups that are talking back and forth and actually using it socially, your study would say that those are the folks who are maybe more on the political extremes, and in the middle, everyone's more of a consumer of information in a more traditional sense, that they're reading information that's out there. Maybe it makes their way through the algorithm to their timeline because of a family member that they have or some friend in there. But that means to me that if you're talking to the folks in that middle, in that bell curve, the folks who you say are self-censoring, there's still value in talking to them. They're just less likely to talk back and engage and make it a conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, it means that when you get on social media, you may feel like the society is a lot more polarized than it really is. And so if you have conversations in your neighborhood, you can take heart that probably there's more people who feel the same way you do than what is reflected on social media.
And let me just add, in some ways, this is a lot like what happens on all other media, is the world that we see represented through the media doesn't always conform to what the reality of our world actually is. And so you can get a warped view of what the world is actually like the more time you spend on any of these mediated channels and what they're telling us about what the world is like.
That was Devin Knighton, assistant professor of public relations at Brigham Young University, and Christopher Wilson, also assistant professor of public relations at Brigham Young University.
Really interesting stuff.
Thank you both
really
for joining
stuff,
us
guys. Thanks so much.
This afternoon.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back after the break, Marty, what's happening out at the old prison site, the old Point of the Mountain? We'll talk to a friend of yours and a guest about where that's going.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.